Now, what this is just a sampling of the many activities started by Srila Prabhupada and carried on by his disciples and grand disciples. When Prabhupada was in London, he saw a sign that says the sun never sets on the British Empire. And his response was, well, why doesn't it shine in London? But Prabhupada made the point that actually the sun never sets on ISKCON. And when you think about it, right now, some devotee is offering Mangal Arati, some devotees are going out on book distribution, some pujaris are cooking for the deity, somewhere they're putting on a festival, somewhere they're putting on a Rath Yatra, somewhere they're distributing books. Thank you very much. So all over the world, there are devotees doing wonderful things. Because sometimes, you know, we tend to be just temple-centric. We're our local temple and whatever the local issue. There's a fight shop next to the San Diego Temple for this cage fighting. And it's called OTM. I think it means on the mat or something, OTM. So somebody asked, what does OTM mean? It says fight shop, OTM. So what are they fighting over? Someone said OTM, over temple management. So devotees, we're always into whatever the local, and it's helpful to, you know, get a little idea of what the big picture is. I was riding in a car with Srila Prabhupada, Detroit, 1975. Prabhupada was coming back from Belal Park. He looked out his window and said, ah, this is Mahaprabhu's movement. This is the logo for Sherwin-Williams Paint by SWB, Sherwin-Williams Paint. So there was a donut shop. There was a liquor store, there was a welfare office, and there was a hardware store. Well, we didn't know. Kept on going. Next day, same corner, Prabhupada said, ah, this is Mahaprabhu's movement. So Govardhan Prabhu asked, Prabhupada, what are you seeing? And Prabhupada was seeing the Sherwin-Williams paint sign. We cover the world, every town and village. This is Mahaprabhu's movement. So, of course, we know it flows from Sridham Mayapur, the appearance place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Just like Mother Ganga's flowing, it flows out all over the world from Mahaprabhu's lotus feet. This is a close-up of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace. I mean, there's so many things we could say. When this, you know, the birth site was discovered by Bhaktisiddhanta Abhaya, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur built this temple. When they built the foundation for this, they found the original deities worshipped by Jagannath Mishra, confirming it was the right spot. This is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's, where the Gaudiya Math started. Prabhupada said that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, this is a veranda. They've got this bougainvillea here, but there's actually a veranda here. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would stand on this corner and argue some powerful point. And because no one could stand up to him and debate in a Sringa Guru, he would go to the other side and defeat his point. And he would pace back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, arguing, defeating, arguing and defeating. And Prabhupada would sit. He would go out on the balcony. Others were afraid to go. He was in such a powerful mood. But Srila Prabhupada and his godbrother said, oh, no, you shouldn't go. Prabhupada said, you know, what is it? Angels, fools may enter. Huh? Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. But Prabhupada said, fool I may be. But he said, and he probably would sit. And his Guru Maharaj appreciated him. Prabhupada would hear these arguments. So in many of Prabhupada's purports and his lectures, we're hearing those same arguments that happened on this balcony between Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and himself. This is the samadhi. Prabhupada actually came to the samadhi before he came to the West, praying that you've given me an impossible mission. But whatever may happen, I may die. Prabhupada had, what is it, a bundle of oats and one suitcase, 40 rupees, which you couldn't even exchange, and a trunk of books. Prabhupada said, when I got off the boat, I didn't know whether to turn left or whether to turn right. But he knew he had the mercy, the order of his Guru Maharaj. So Prabhupada got great strength from this place, the samadhi of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Of course, we know here's Prabhupada's samadhi, Sridham Mayapur, where it flows. Prabhupada said, what is it? One is Janmasthan, the birthplace, but Karmasthan. Krishna's not famous for taking birth in Mathura. He's famous for his activities in Vrindavan. So Prabhupada said, in the same way, the yog pit is there. We offer all respects. But where is Lord Chaitanya's work is being done? That's coming from Chaitanya Chandra, the Mayapur Chandradaya Mandir. So here's a little bit about the Sankirtan mission. Sankirtan means together, not just alone. So this is the temple of Vedic planetarium. This is actually... Does somebody have a watch? I'll give it back. Can I borrow your watch? You know where I live. Okay. This is hard to read. Okay, there we go. Thank you, Prabhu. Ambarish, this is projected to be a $35 million project. Ambarish Prabhu has pledged $25 million. And there's another family, I think they're the Banerjee family. I forget the name of the other family. The other family has donated $5 million. So it's practically in the bag. We have to collect the rest, but with a beautiful project like this. A little setup. I was the temple treasurer, Sankirtan leader, temple commander at the Detroit temple. Govardhan Prabhu was the temple president. We were trying to figure out how to get money for storm windows because of our heat, you know, the bill for the winter time for the heating was very expensive. There was a young man, college student, his name was Al. He used to come 3 times a week, Bhagavad Gita class. His friend Atulananda brought him, I think. So we're talking with Govardhan. I'm talking with Govardhan. The price was $3,000. We literally had no money in those days. So Al came over and said, what are you talking about? We said, oh, storm windows, here's the cost, but we don't have the money. But, hey, you know, just go to Bhagavad Gita class. He's a college student. What can he do? You know, just thank you very much. Take prasad, Hare Krishna. Off he went. About 3 days later, there's a guy, you know, Sam's storm windows and screens. And this guy's measure. I said, whoa. Wait a minute. You know? I said, if it's a free home demonstration, fine, but we have no money. He said, no, it's prepaid order. I said, what? And I looked at it, and it said Al Ford. I thought, oh, somebody's goofing on these people. You know, this is Motor City, Detroit. Alfred, the Ford buildings, the Coliseum, everything's named after the Fords, you know. But somebody's just goofing on this guy, you know. Sherlock Holmes here, I hadn't put two and two together. So then I mentioned it to Govardhan. He said, Al. He said, do you think it's that guy who comes? I said, ah, couldn't be. He came that night for Bhagavad Gita class. We told him the story. You know, hey, what's it? He said, yeah. He said, I paid for it. And we said, well, why didn't you tell us you were Alfred Ford? He said, no. He said, my entire life, I've never known who my friends were. He said, I didn't know if they were my friends because they actually liked me as a person or because, you know, they could party at my house, we could fly them to Aspen to go skiing, or we went down to the house and flew. I never knew who my friends were. He said, but the devotees had no idea who I was, thought I was penniless, and genuinely cared about me. So he's actually a very nice heart, very intelligent, actually. When we found out who he was, Prabhupada came to New York a few months later. Govardhan took him to meet Srila Prabhupada. Ambarish was struck by many things, but one of the things he was struck by is everyone was always falling all over him to praise him and to get something out of him. When he was introduced as Alfred Ford, Prabhupada said, I know one joke about Ford. So Prabhupada went in and he said, there was a man who blindfolded could guess the name of any car in India. So they blindfolded him. First car, boom, boom, boom. Chevrolet, he was right. Next car, boom, boom, boom. Fiat, he was right. Still blindfolded. A bullock cart goes by with all kinds of pans and tins, and it's a family that's moving it. It's making all kinds of, man, it's Ford. And Ambarish said, Prabhupada really cracked up, you know. And then Ambarish responded, yes. And he asked Prabhupada, do you know what Ford stands for? And Prabhupada said, found on road dead. And then Ambarish said, or fix or repair daily. So that, you know, it was a very, and Ambarish said to Prabhupada, he said, everyone's always after my money. He said, oh, Krishna wants your money too. But see, Krishna doesn't want just your money. Krishna wants your mind. He wants your intelligence. He wants your devotion. He wants your heart. He said, Krishna wants everything. And Ambarish was struck. He said, he thought his money was like, that's the bottom line. But Krishna wanted, you know, the money was just incidental. What Krishna really wanted was you become a devotee. So now, 40 years later, it's happening. And just quickly, this, some of you know, so I'm going to go quick. This will be a planetarium. It'll actually be a sojourn of the soul. You'll have dairamas, like Om Buru Bhuvaswa. You can actually go up through dairamas through all the different planetary systems, from the hellish planets, middle planets, heavenly planets, and ultimately you'll come to Goloka up here. Goloka up here. So Prabhupada, and you'll be able to look down and see the deities. So it said you'll be able to see Goloka, Gokula, and the entire cosmos. It'll be experiential. So people will really have I'm just thinking of the time factor, but if you ever go, they have a Bhagavad Gita museum in Delhi. I've seen people go through that, And after they see the, you know, changing bodies, karma, all the reactions, universal form, they had to put a bench by one of the by the door where you go out, because people were so shocked. They were stunned. They had to sit down and sort of recompose themselves to go further. So when people go through this, it will be extremely powerful. This side will be a research institute, Bhaktivedanta Institute. This will be a IMAX theater. They can show all different shows on the cosmos, all different shows on Ayurveda, Puranas, so many different things. So that's what this will be. And then this over here, this is for Lord Nisringadev, because Prabhupada said he should have a separate temple. And there'll actually be a working model of the universe, fifth canto. And because it's to scale, there'll actually, all the way out here, there'll be markings of where the different planets are. But inside, it'll all be moving, and then outside, they can do all the calculations, all the different lokas and dvipas. So it will be, people will come from around the world, serious scientists, to see what is this all about. It's, yeah, gold domes. Well, I don't know the answer to that. Last thing I knew it was gold domes, but then there was a question of cost. So I don't know the answer. These are where the gardens used to be. It's actually started. I'll go back and then I'll come back to this. It's a long building. So those of you who know Mayapur, this is a pile driver. They have about six of these out there. Ultimately, there's going to be 3,000 pilings just to support this building. And so Mayapur is shaking now the whole time where they're driving these pilings. And some devotees are complaining. Jai Pataka Maharaj. So some people are they're saying, oh, you know, what about the noise? Ambarish said, when I hear those pile drivers, it is the music of the spheres. Because this is the fruit of, you know, 40 years of work. This is the ISKCON's midday meal program. It is the largest vegetarian free school lunch program in the world. In Delhi alone, 250,000 plates of prasadam. So you've got Juhu, you've got Chaupati, you've got Hyderabad, you've got Tirupati. It's close to 1 million plates a day, 5 days a week. Now we've moved on to Burma. Okay, this is it right here. It used to be part of India. Now, these three slides have a life of their own, so you'll see. But this is Prabhu Vishnu Maharaj. He's the GBC and main director there. This is inside the temple. Yeah, you got it, my friend. This is the Sunday feast in the capital. These are some of the brahmacharis at the capital, main temple there. This is because, as I was saying, it used to be part of India. This is a temple that you know, was in bad shape, and they donated in 1992. Here's the temple now, completely renovated. This is their Ratha Yatra. This is a temple they're building. They've just started construction. Here's their Food for Life program. This is the Burmese Bhagavad Gita, 17,000 copies. It's a very nationalistic country, and it's heavy Buddhist. And anything you get printed, it has to get permission from. It has to go before this board of Buddhist monks. And on one hand, we're okay. It'll stop here. On one hand, we're okay. Das Avatar, you know, we offer all respects to Lord Buddha. Then again, Prabhupada gets, as we know, very solid punches about Sunyavadi. So what to do? It'll never get past him. So they print about 50 copies, taking out all the purports where Prabhupada, you know, smashes on the Buddhism. You know, because it's like a number line. You know, you come from negative, you come to zero. Okay, fine. But where's the whole positive dimension? So that Buddha doesn't mention, and we all know the reason why. So they'll get approval to print, you know, whatever it is, 15,000 Bhagavad Gitas on that version, and they slip all the other purports back in and print it. But it's risky. If they're caught, they'll be kicked out of the country. They could go to jail. So devotees are quite brave. And then you saw here, there's their Burmese Back to Godhead magazine. 5,000 copies. They have to be very careful. They have to be very careful that they don't convert. It's like preaching in a Muslim country. If you convert a Muslim, they flip. So they have to be very careful. Yes. We got to roll on because of the time factor. Can I say questions later? That's just a burning question. Only because they're going to get on my case. So China, mission possible. Now, this is, of course, Tamal Krishna Goswami. Here he is on a bicycle, because you have to be undercover there. When they first went into China, this was, what, 75, 76, 76, maybe something like, maybe even 77, 76. And, you know, it was under Mao, or maybe it was the Gang of Four. If you went into China as a tourist, you had a government minder who stayed with you the whole time. You had to go to the Forbidden Palace, you went to the Great Wall of China, you did, you know, whatever it is, you did some shopping, and you were out. And you couldn't talk to people, you couldn't do anything. So it was very, very difficult. Finally, they found that if you get a business visa, you get some, you know, you can travel around on your own and you don't have a government minder. So, but what business? You need a sponsor, a Sterling Caddy, or what to do? Drishtadyumna, Tamal Krishnamurti's brahmachari assistant, his father was a top executive in Seagram's, you know, the liquor company. And so they went in under business visas under Seagram's whiskey. So they joke that this is the real intoxication, you know, the holy name, you know. Everything else, you wake up with a headache and you've made a complete idiot. I saw a T-shirt the other day. It said, instant idiot, just add alcohol. But here's the real thing. So, and Tamal Krishnamurti, he told me this personally. He said, you know, it was so tough. And they were thinking, you know, they couldn't print books. They, you know, you can't have a temple. You can't go in dhotis. You can't do Hari Nam. The one thing they could do is they could go to parks, because people were trying to learn English, and because it's the business language of the world. You could go to any park in any city in China, stand on a milk crate or, you know, up a little high, and start speaking in English. Immediately you'd have a crowd of a couple hundred people who wanted to hear and practice English. So he said that was really the only venue they had. And he was thinking, he said he was sitting thinking, how, you know, 1 billion people, I don't know, was it, how many people in China? Depends on what happened last night,
1.3
huh?
1.3 billion.
1.3 and going up. So how to reach these people? And he was thinking it will only happen if they can just chant the holy name. If somehow or other the holy name can spread, these people can be saved. 3 days later, a man showed up. He'd gotten Prabhupada's Gita in Hong Kong. On his own, he'd become a full-time devotee. He was chanting 16 rounds, following all the regular principles, and he came and asked for initiation. So Tamal Krishnamurti, you know, you test a grain of rice, you can understand the pot. You know, in English, like English names in Chinese, I'm sure sound funny. Similarly, Chinese names in English sound funny, like been too fat or so what or who flung dung or, you know, it sounds pretty funny, right? The first devotee to take initiation from Tamal Krishnamurti in China, his name was Hyu, next name Chan, last Ting, Yu Chan Ting. Tamal Krishnamurti said, you know, this is bigger than me. I just do my job and Lord Chaitanya will take care of it, you know. So we should offer our respects to Tamal Krishnamurti and the devotees who opened up China. This is the Chinese Gita, Sanskrit and full purports. And for so many years, the government said no. And they presented, finally they figured out they had some government contacts, and they presented it as historical, as social, you know, Varnashram system. You're also different social systems you're studying. They presented it, they have the life of Buddha, that they print the life of Jesus. So they said the life of Krishna, why not? So they actually got permission in Chinese, in Mandarin and Cantonese. So there is the Chinese Bhagavad Gita. I don't know, recently, but I don't know the answer. These are their sales. 1999, these are 17,000, you know, whatever it is. RMB is the Chinese currency. Now, in 2009, they're up to 245,000. There was one devotee. Anyway, I'm trying to be quick here. He was a college professor, a college student. His professor, he noticed that his professor didn't eat any of the, you know, probably the Chinese, anything in the air but a kite, anything on the ground but a, you know, a rickshaw, anything in the water but a junk. They'll eat anything. Well, that's off the track. When they did the printing of that, what is it called? Light of the Bhagwat? Tamal Krishnamurti told me this. You know, after you do business with an Oriental, and many businesses, they take you out to dinner. So they signed the contract for so many books. They were very happy. The Chinese printers, Hong Kong actually, they wanted to take him out to dinner. He said, you know, I'm a monk. I'm a vegetarian. I can't drink karaoke. I can't do all that stuff, you know. They said, all right, fine. They met him at the airport with a big cake. They wanted to give him something. So he said, you know, no meat, no fish, no eggs. I can't eat this. He said, no, it's guaranteed. No meat, no fish, no eggs, no problem. So he said, well, let me try it inverse. He said, what is it made of? It was made of dried, powdered insects. That's what the flower was. It's whoa, you know. So I don't know how exactly we got off on that. But the sufficient to say it's a tough place. These are the only installed deities in China. This is Harinam. These are all initiated devotees. And they're having Harinam in Tiananmen Square. That's right, but you know, the Forbidden Palace and all that stuff. Forbidden City. So they can't go out in Western dress, but they're chanting. There's more, but we can't say. But there's devotees. Oh, that's what I wanted to tell. So this devotee, young student, noticed that his professor didn't eat, you know, whatever they were eating. He didn't eat that. And they noticed that he would go on these long walks and he had a hand in a bag. Where's this guy going, you know? And he seemed very peaceful and he seemed, you know, so he began to inquire. Turns out the professor was a devotee. And when he saw that he wasn't a government agent, that the student was sincere, he began preaching to him, gave him a Bhagavad Gita, and then left. He would transfer to another place. It's like it was very tangential how they were meeting. So he was alone for like 6 months. Then he had a friend also who became a devotee. And his friend just stopped by, said, read these books, take these beads, was gone. Friend had come back 6 months later, stay for a night, show him how to cook, be gone. Gradually he was becoming a devotee. Finally, you know, he finished school, he was teaching, he was actually doing the same thing, he said, well, I'll do the same thing as my professor, I will, you know, teach the students Bhagavad Gita. Government came, said, you can't do this, we're going to fire you. What they actually told him is that we're coming back, we're going to file a case on you, we're coming back in 2 weeks, and you'll have to go to Beijing. You know, we want to talk to you. So he thought, what am I going to do? What to do, you know? They're going to come and get me, and I don't know where the that night, the devotees showed up. They said, don't ask any questions, but we want to take you to meet someone. Took him. Tamal Krishnamurti was traveling there. Nice Bhagavad Gita class. He began to cry. He said, I don't want to do this. I want to come with you. Tamal Krishnamurti said, come on. The man became an initiated devotee at Brahmacharya. He was distributing books. I'm almost done, but it is interesting. This is because you saw those scores. It's not easy. I mean, I know you guys are struggling at the airport. It's not easy. So he's out there. This devotee, like, who is it? Kalidas used to like to eat the prasadam from other, you know. He liked to wear the clothing from other devotees. Old, worn-out clothing that they wouldn't. And he came from a very well-to-do family. So he's out on book distribution. He's wearing the remnants, Western dress or, you know, whatever, of used clothing of devotees. So everything's kind of torn and kind of ragged and this and that. He's distributing books. He hands a book to one lady. It's his sister. Now, he had told them, because, you know, you have to have a government pass where you're going to go, and his parents would have flipped. He told them that he'd gone to Shanghai. They thought that he had a big, you know, he was working as an investment banker, was going to make all this money and buy them a television set, you know. And all of a sudden, the sister gets, and here's their brother. You know, he's in worn-out clothing, and she began to cry. So it goes on and on and on. He threw him in jail. There's a whole story. But that's what the devotees go through. Now we've moved to the Ukraine. Here's Ukraine, you know, Western Europe. Here's the Ukraine right here. There's over 2,000 initiated devotees. This is the temple. They have a wonderful restaurant. If you're ever in Kiev, don't worry, we've got you covered. Last year we opened a restaurant in Mongolia, so no yak burgers. You can just... Here we're also in Kiev. 60 devotees live in the temple. This is the Sunday feast. They have 500 to 800 people attend. They have over 1,000, 1,500 on a weekend, or on a Sunday feast. They have so many people, there's a hall. Under this, there's a hall the exact same size. They do it in shifts. Half the people are going to the program upstairs, half are taking prasadam. Then they shift, and the downstairs goes up, and the lowers take prasadam, because they can't fit everybody in the building. This is, they do the summer festival 2 weeks. They go down by the Black Sea. 4,000 devotees attending. Just like we have our Festival of Inspiration in New Vrindavan, so they're also doing this. Thank you very much. That's Niranjana Maharaj, who's the local GBC. And just anyone who knows Niranjana Maharaj, he's just a certified saintly person. We have become relevant. Of course, we were always relevant because it's Sanatan Dharma. But just like Svavas read that purport this morning, you know how people are simply their greed and ultimately the thing will collapse. There's a morning walk. And Prabhupada is talking how Vedic system was gold standard. They had money, they had bankers and things, but it was gold standard. Generally, it was barter, but there was also gold. And then, but the devotees say, but Prabhupada, this is 1971 or mid-70s. But Prabhupada, if it's gold standard, you know, how will they do these big transactions? How will we send billions of dollars a year and millions of dollars? How will we do these global big transactions? The devotees are scratching their heads, like, what will happen? Now, what is the result? We recently experienced, because of these big transactions, you know, people suck off all the money, Goldman Sachs, and the poor little people suffer like anything. Like now in Greece, the government, to pay for their Olympics, their big false ego, they mortgage the entire country, the leaders. Now they have to pay for that whole thing. All the paper is becoming due. The government ministers who all got their Mercedes and villas because all the money they sucked out of the, you know, the Olympic things from corruption, they're not suffering. But the poor people, because the IMF is in there, you know, doing its financial, you know, tighten the belt. And you've got school teachers are being thrown out of their jobs. Old ladies are losing their pension. The innocent people are being crushed like anything. International Monetary Fund. So the whole and if Greece goes down, then Spain goes down, then Portugal goes down. It's a big world. Big problem. My brother-in-law and my sister are school teachers. They moved to Oregon. Great pension, great retirement. They were going to retire at 60, each of them getting $100,000 a year plus savings. Fantastic. They were going to travel. When this whole thing collapsed, they lost 50% of their savings. Cut. Pension, gone. I asked him, I said, Jerry, I said, what are you going to do? I said, when are you going to retire? He said, oh, no, no. He said, forget retire. He said, I'm going to have to work till I expire. Not retire, expire. And it's happening. So we are relevant. I want to just breeze through this brief. And people are thinking about it. They got a real shake. People are graduating from college now. They can't get jobs. Because people have to work now. You have to work till you're 70, 75 instead of retiring 60 to 65. So the old coots aren't moving out. The young guys can't move in. It's a rough world, Prabhus. We're just, you know, taking prasadam, chanting Hare Krishna. Trust me, it's a rough world out there. So this is, you know, this is Monsanto's motto, better living through chemicals. You see the little golf ball, very happy, no problem. So far, so good. But he doesn't realize he's just about to get whacked. So they're trying to, you know, make this fool's paradise. Prabhupada said, Ram Raj with no Ram. This genetically modified frankenfood, so many things they're trying to do. This is nothing new under the sun. As a classic materialist, Ravana's goal, build a staircase to heaven. You know, the swastika, the Aryan symbol, it represents many things, auspiciousness, but it actually represents how everything revolves around the Supreme, Ishwara Paramakrishna. That's one of the things that swastika... Hitler said, okay, very nice, but it goes my way. The Nazi swastika is the opposite. It's the typical, you know, the archetype materialistic, everything goes my way. Not that we have to submit, not that we are subordinate to the laws of nature, but we figure out the laws of nature and then we can control. It's completely backwards. And there's suffering. Here's cloning. Nice try, two scientists, imperfect scientists. Whoops, maybe the next one will work out. The simple math. Now, this is from the UN and also from the World Wildlife Fund. These numbers are confirmed. Sometimes they say 7, sometimes they say 8, so I'm conservative. If, because everyone, the goal is to come to American standard all over the world. What do they have, that Tata, that car that they did, the Nano, that they found it explodes upon impact, you know? But everybody gets a car, everybody gets a big screen TV, everybody, you know, that's the goal. Big house, big car. How to become America. When I was in India, it was like about 5 years ago, I was buying a Lota, metal Lota, you know? You can put hot milk in it, it's a nice thing. Metal Lota was, I don't know, 40 rupees, I was probably being cheated. So, but there was a plastic Lota, Dayglo plastic Lota. It was selling for 120 rupees. So I asked the guy, I said, why would I pay more for an inferior product? He said, but it's plastic like America. I said, no, trust me. I got plenty of plastic, trust me. No, I'll take the metal loader, no problem. But the whole world is chasing after it, you know? But you simply to do the math, if you take the amount of natural resources, the raw materials, the packing so many things that the American population, standard of life consumes, it's simple math. Then you multiply it over the population. You'd have to have the resources of 6 planets. It simply does not work. It's impossible. You can say you're going to colonize the moon, but that's not going to do it for you. So from the right principles comes the right practices. We have a world that's created from wants. Here's what we want. But what do we actually need? That's a whole other world, you know? We are trained from as little kids. Gimme, gimme, gimme. It's stimulus response. The whole, when you're a kid, you go to the doctor. What happens? The doctor gives you a shot in the rear. Whoa, man, that hurt. They give you a lollipop. Oh, not so bad. You know? So pain, response, stimulus response. That's how we're conditioned. Since like Pavlov's dogs. So, Bhagavad Gita, we all know the verse, burns like fire. Simple, two things sequentially. Because the point is, in Prabhupada's books, in the message that we're delivering, in the lifestyle we're delivering, it is the solution. It is real, it is practical, it is the only solution. If you take a pan of gas, I don't want to make fun of you, but let's suppose, oh, let's pick some name, Bhakta Bozo, no offense intended. Bhakta Bozo sees a fire and decides he wants to put it out. And he concludes, hey, I saw my parents throw a clear liquid on the fire and it put it out. So here's a clear liquid. What does it say? Gasoline? Well, it's a clear liquid. I'll throw this clear liquid on the fire and it should go out, just like with water. Now, sequentially, this is important. Two things happen. One, then the other. If you have a small fire, this size campfire, you throw a couple gallons of gasoline on it, what is the first thing that happens? There's a second thing, but what's the first thing that happens? It goes down. And I think it shuts off the oxygen. So it goes down. Hey, no problem. Solve that, right? What's the next thing that happens? Kaboom. So Krishna's making that point. You know, we all know the example. You itch and you scratch it. So they have a society that's based on scratching itches, and the whole world is on fire, and they're never going to become happy. Simple thing. Condition and consciousness. Which one determines your happiness? Everyone is thinking it's conditions. Let me just change the conditions. I've given this example, but you're tolerant. I swear to you, I was in New York. I was flying to Puerto Rico. In the New York airport, big picture, just like this, going nuts in this, you know, cacophony of this big city, noise and chaos and just too much. Go to the Caribbean. Go to Puerto Rico. Peaceful, quiet, tranquilo. Okay? Sounds good. I mean, I don't, you know, what do I care? But so I'm on the plane. I swear to you, in the Puerto Rico airport, before I even got outside, big billboards going nuts on this little island with nothing to do, go to New York. So I remember, you know, hang on a minute. It's a 3,000, you know, at 1,500 miles over Atlanta. Is that where happiness is? Because I missed it. So it's not the conditions, it's one's consciousness. Here, one who's fixed in knowledge of a higher taste, then one's happy in any condition. So some points made by a movie, just another activity that devotees are doing. Maybe I should show you this first. This is a movie, Lost Village movie. This is done by Bhakti Bhai Bhav Maharaj, and it is first class. The photography, it's the anything you see on, you know, a BBC or whatever, Nature Channel, it is first class. But and Lokanath Maharaj is the narrator. And it explains what village life in India is, what's happening to it. It's saying lost, what is being lost here? All those values, all that interconnectivity. Yeah, no, you have to buy it. I think you can get a snippet. Whoa, we lost something. Anyway, we'll go forward. But you see this alienation, isolation, loss of sense of worth. That's what's actually happening to people. People are completely alienated. They're alienated from nature. They're alienated from their family. They're alienated from their neighbors. It's a big problem. They feel completely isolated. And there's a loss of sense of worth. I met a man, I remember about 15 years ago, he was working in Michigan at the River Rouge stamping factory, you know, auto parts. And I asked him, I said, what do you do? First off, he'd worked there 6 years. I said, what do you do? He said, I don't know. He said, I put the metal in, I pull the lever. When it comes out, it's all bent to hell. Now, where's the sense of worth in that, you know? And you've got people, America's a service industry. All they're doing is shuffling papers. Where's the sense of worth? They haven't created anything of value. So you've got that's the world they're leaving. So what Prabhupada says and what the Vedas teach and the Vedic lifestyle is real. So, let's see here. Now, we've moved to Hungary, and I'll tell you why in a second. So there's a map. You can see where you are. This is the main road to the largest freshwater river lake in Europe. And it's a huge vacation, Lake Volton or something. It's a huge lake. Here's our sign right by it. We're right on the way, so you can see it's right off. So they get, you know, hundreds of thousands of people go to this lake. After a few days, they're all sunburned. You know, mother and father are fighting. Kids have, you know, been there, done that. What to do? So they go visit our Krishna village. They get 60,000 people visit in 4 months. That's the four-month season. It used to be, it's a 6,000 acre. It was a government farm under the communist era, you know, collective farm. They'd used so much artificial fertilizer and pesticide that the water table had become completely toxic. You could not use the water. It was more or less useless, barren land. Devotees took it over, organic farming. Now I think it's 15 years later or whatever it is. The water is so good, they can bottle it and sell it. And it's become a beautiful farm. This building was built by the devotees. This is the Goshala. This is a computer-generated animation. This was the plan. When they submitted these drawings to the local contractors for bids, they said, wait, we got the wrong plans here. This is better than for people. This is a cow barn? They said, that's right. That's what we want, you know? Now, here's the finished product. Here's all the donors standing out in front, and here's the finished barn. These are a picture of the scene there. It's all off the grid, solar, they got their own wells, everything. This is, you know, what do they eat? This is Govardhan Puja. Everything here, except for the rice and some of the spices, was grown on the farm. You think you're starving? Here's a deity, beautiful Radhasham Sundar. These are Hungarian bulls. Shiva Ramarsh was telling me, and I saw it first, just as a sidelight. You see those horns? What they used to do when the farmers, you know, a couple hundred years ago, 100 years ago, they used to have wolves and everything, and the bulls would be out in the field, you know, overnight. What they could do, they'd put the calves and the cows in the middle. The bulls would be outside with these horns. They could fight off bears and wolves with these things. And I reached in, you know, what do I know? Green, you know, I'm a city slicker. I reached in to pat the bull. Whew, with his head, he missed my arm by about this much. And Shiva Ramarsh, that was just a warning, be respectful. He said, you could have taken your arm off just like that. But he just wanted you to be a little respectful, you know. And I saw it. When you come down in the morning, because they're going to pick some of them for hauling wood and for plowing. They don't use all the bulls all the time. They jostle each other. They fight with each other to get out of the way. I mean, to get in front because they want to work. He said, if you don't work the bulls, they become like delinquents, like bulls gone bad, you know. They'll break fences. They get in trouble. They want to work. This devotee right here is very far out. He was a chemistry professor at a university. Got Prabhupada's books, became a devotee, like that. He's now become one of the best beekeepers, experts in Europe. Because, you know, they're losing, like the canary in the mine shaft. They're losing beehives all over Europe. Now it's coming to America. They don't know why. We have a very successful hives. So I asked him, I said, did you ever work with bees before? He said, no, Prabhu. He said, never. I said, well, how did you learn so much? He said, you work with bees, you'll learn pretty fast. You don't make the same mistake too many times. This is quite far out. This is, like I said, they have all these tour groups. They got a call from this one gentleman, and he said, we are 40 government officials. We heard about your farm. We heard about, you know, we're interested in sustainable development. We'd like to tour your farm. Okay, sure, they came. Turns out they were the top police officials for the entire country. Not just the local city chief, but like, you know, figure you have 20 districts. These were the top guys for, you know, like counties or districts. They had a wonderful time, loved the devotees. Here you see, obviously the guy's happy, stuffed full of prasadam, you know, like that. A couple months later, Christmas marathon, Budapest airport. Devotees are doing the airport. They went in, no permission. They got, arrested. They got tossed out. You don't have a permit. You can't do this. They called their friends. You know, top police chief said, you know, can you help us with this? They got a call the next day from the airport security and the airport manager. We're so sorry. Please come back. I swear to you, you can ask Shiva Ramesh. They came back the next day. The security was out there helping them unload the books. They had a little area roped off, you know. Here's where you can take a nap. Here's where you take your prasadam, you know. So these things are going on. Now, this is Sustainable Research and Education Center. This building is now built. I haven't been back, so I didn't get pictures of it. This is computer animation. This building was paid for by the government. When the economy collapsed, the Hungarian, I think it's the krona or whatever it is, dropped by 40%. People had mortgages in U.S. dollars or in the euros, and all of a sudden they were getting paid with the Hungarian currency. You had people, literally, you had all apartment buildings empty, people thrown out, couldn't pay their rent, couldn't pay their car payments, people committing suicide. The whole country was just creamed. I mean, we experienced it in America, but you have no idea what these people went through. Or maybe you do. So this is because of the devotees, they're interested in, well, I'll show you, sustainable development. We have a world model now. It's based on growth. It's based on ever-increasing consumption. I remember when China opened up, my father had just retired. I stopped by to visit him. He was looking at the Wall Street Journal. And he said, I retired too soon. He said, think of it, 1 billion consumer units. All those senses to titillate. My father's mantra was, create a need, then fill it. Create a need. You're sailing along. Put any kid in front of a television set. Kid's perfectly happy. Put him in front of a television set. 15 minutes later, because of all the commercials, oh, I want this, I want that, I need this, I want that, give me this, give me that, Create a need, and oh, guess what? I'm Mr. Nice Guy. I can just help for a small price. I can help you solve that problem. So growth or balance? Competition, cooperation, material wealth, spiritual wealth, soft sustainability, hard sustainability. You can read profit orientation, commonwealth orientation, selfishness, selflessness, consumer society, everything's disposable, or a sustainable society. How can you, can balance a thing? And the real thing is that life is hard. These people are working two jobs. The mother, when I was a kid, practically speaking, the mothers didn't work. They stayed home and took care of the kids. Which is a full-time job. Peaceful life. Now the mother works, the kids are all in daycare, on medication. No wonder they got ADD. They're completely, no mother, no father. Drug them and stick them in daycare. So it's a tough life for everybody. Whereas Vedic life is peaceful. I remember seeing, and we're not talking about going back to Stone Age, but just as a principle, I remember going to Jayapur one time, and I was on that road from Vrindavan to Jayapur. And, so many head-on collisions with cars. There was a bullock cart. The entire family on the hay was asleep in the back, all sound asleep. And the bull was just walking. He knows where to go. Have you ever read in any paper about a head-on collision between bullock carts? So, now this is ISKCON, Brazil. 9-year urban temples, 5. And we just give you a sample. Here's one of their farms. All of the buildings built by devotees. This is the temple building built by devotees. Nice waterfall, no piranha. This is inside of the temple, built by devotees. Now, this is something else. We all know our own hometown boy makes good, Druta Karma Prabhu. So this is, well, we'll show. You know the Bhakti Gaudiya magazine. You know about the book. You know the principle. But just as a sidelight, this fish lives at the bottom of the ocean. Deepest, there's no light. There's the methane gas and everything can't get out. It's a toxic environment. There's no light. Incredible pressure. Nothing should live there. This fish lives there. And this is a little light. See, this is a lure. And other fish come to check, because it's completely black. They see this light. And this guy's not a vegetarian. So they come to check this out, and they're swallowed. Now, the thing is that each, the principle of mutation survival of the fittest, that each mutation, just simple. My arm is an inch longer than your arm, so I can get the fruit better. I can punch you before you can punch me. So, it's a simple thing. By a mutation that's a positive for my survival, I outlast you, my genes last, and in this way, the world evolves. Mutation, survival of the fittest, and this is the way it works. But each one of these, to create this, it's sequential. Each mutation has to work simultaneously. I'll give an example. And I heard this example, I've read it before, but I heard it myself from a top professor, UCSD. His thing is microbiology. And he said, listen, you get enough monkeys at typewriters, and one of those monkeys is eventually going to bang out a word. Now, if you have enough universes, they're coming from the singularity, they're, you know, popping out and going back and you from time immemorial, you throw the dice enough time, you're going to get a double six, you know? If you create enough universes are coming out, one of them is going to have the right conditions for life. Just enough time, enough tosses, you're going to get life. Well, it's a lot more complicated than that because it has to work sequentially. So when this guy said, he actually conceded, it's not just getting to make the comparison to the complexity of this world. Okay, fine. You put enough monkeys at enough typewriters, give them enough bananas so they keep working. One of them is going to type out a word. Hey, you might even get a sentence. You might even get a book. But that book is going to be one syllable. It's going to be, you know, Dick saw the cat. You know, Jane ran fast. It's going to be all, you know, monosyllables. They accept that this world is so complex and the sequencing so essential. It is the same as you have to have... The man said this to me. If you get unlimited monkeys... Confirmed. Unlimited monkeys. Unlimited typewriters. Unlimited time. Can we kill it before it multiplies? It's going to keep going until somebody shuts it off. It's not ticking, is it? All right, we're okay. If you get enough monkeys at enough typewriters with enough time, and you compare that to, you know, chance and the creation of the world as we know it, it is the same as one of those monkeys typing the complete works of Shakespeare. And on top of it, not only typing the complete works of Shakespeare, but at one go, without stopping, without error. And this professor said to me, I was sitting with some devotees, you know, and some friends of the temple. And the guy said, yes, that's how complex it is. We accept that if you have enough monkeys, enough typewriters, they will type out the complete works of Shakespeare without stop, without error. Now, if you believe that, fine. You drink the Kool-Aid, you believe it. We just looked at it, we were incredulous. So I always like this. When they ask Prabhupada about what evolution, Prabhupada said, there's still monkeys. Where's the evolution, you know? So that's just, this is Druda Karma at a university, one of the main universities in Denmark. Students with rapt attention. This is a headline of one of the main newspapers in Denmark. Because he's kicking over their whole worldview. This says in Danish, is this man dangerous? And if you look at Druda Karma, he looks a little dangerous, doesn't he? don't mess with me, you know? He's not going to buy any of their mundane... There's a man who's not going to accept that you have enough monkeys, enough typewriters, you're going to get Shakespeare. No, he does not accept it. So these are some of the nice preaching activities. This is something very far out. This is the Bhaktivedanta Research Institute. This is started by Hari Sari Prabhu, and you'll see in just a minute. But it's collecting all the works of our acharyas. And there's a lot of stuff out there. What this is, what you see right here, this is the handwriting. This is Vrindavan Das Thakur's Chaitanya Mangala. No, not Chaitanya Mangala. What is it? Chaitanya Bhagavat. This is Chaitanya Bhagavat, Vrindavan Das Thakur. His own manuscript with his own hand. This is the writing pen that Ramananda Roy used to use. These things are out there. It's dedicated to gathering, preserving, digitizing, and disseminating works in three important fields: Gaudiya Vaishnava culture and philosophy, Vedic cosmology, and the Vedas. This is the institute they've had donated. This building is donated. Just as an example, the Vrindavan Research Institute, if you've ever been there, they have the original works of Rupa Goswami, writings of Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami. It's right down Bhaktivedanta Marg from us, you know. They started in 1968. He now has 30,000 manuscripts, including these. That guy, there was a lost book, and I've forgotten the name of it, by Sanatana Goswami, and it had been lost for 300 years. He was praying, how will we ever, you know, it was mentioned in other Goswami literature. He was sitting by the Jamuna, chanting his Gayatri. A bundle floating on the water floated up. This is a true story. Floated up to the bank. Finished his Gayatri, unwrapped it. It was that written on this type of that palm leaf. It was that book by Sanatana Goswami. How is it floating in the water? You know, just came to him. So there's a lot of stuff out there, And at the right place, right time, Krishna will reveal it. So this is the inside. They have 1,000 titles to start. But I'll show you. It started. This Gaudiya Math Sannyasi, very friendly to ISKCON, he has books that he's had for 300 years. His guru had, his guru's guru had, his guru's guru. And now he realizes there's no one to carry it on. Who's going to take care of this treasure house of Gaudiya literature? Writings by Shamananda from Orissa. What's going to happen to this stuff? Rasikananda, what's going to happen? So he's donated to ISKCON. Here's Hari Sarya, of course. And just to show you, this is a busload of books. Oh, it gets better, Prabhu. They're just, here's the devotees. They're sorting through these books. They've just started. This is a postcard that fell out of one of the books by Bhaktivinoda Thakur to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, instructing him how to develop Navadvip Dham. Just fell out of it. It's a postcard. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's own handwriting. See how it's all worm-eaten and everything? These are the personal diaries of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in his own hand. His personal diaries. Can you imagine what's in there? It's a treasure trove of you cannot estimate, unestimable wealth. This is Tarun Kanti Ghosh. He was a big publisher, so many stories about him, in Bengal, but he had a number of local papers all over. He had a library, his grandfather's library, all the way back to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and past. So he had this personal library kept in his charge. These are his descendants. It says here, family now considering donating that library. But they've actually come, they've met Hari Sari, they're donating all of those books. Now we've moved on. This is Botswana. For those who don't know, here it is. Landlocked country in the middle of nowhere. And yet, we have a beautiful temple coming up. In Botswana. They have a restaurant, Govinda's. Here's the deities, Krishna Balaram. So if you go to the Ukraine, we've got a restaurant. You go to, Mongolia will take care of you. Botswana will take, you won't have to, you know, here you have the wonderful Govindas. Don't worry, you won't have to go into, withdrawals or, you know, they'll take care of you. Now a little bit about the United States, just quick, and then we're, two more things and we're done. This is New Vrindavan. You know, New Vrindavan, a lot of things happen there, inauspicious. And they've been suffering for a long time. And, you know, it's a reaction, so many things, you know. You can't treat Vaishnavas and not have a reaction, unjustly, and get a reaction. But it's almost like they've served their time. Turns out that there's a new way of extracting natural gas that's non, you know, what do you call it? Not polluting, but non, you know, it's not like that strip mining. They just, a little shaft goes in. Turns out New Vrindavan's sitting on a bunch of this natural gas. They have signed leases, and over the next 5 years, they're going to get a couple $1 million. And with that, you can see the palace now, but they're going to completely restore it, take care of the cows, fix the cabins, redo the roads. So New Vrindavan is back. This was a top newspaper, like the Sunday insert for the top newspaper for West Virginia. And they've got all these, you know, they're making their point that, you know, the spiritual life, you'll feel better, solve so many problems. But you see, they have the Pentecostal guy. They've got a Catholic priest. They've got some, you know, Russian Orthodox. They've got some Jewish with the Torah, all these different things. Here we have Mother Malati, the devotee. But she said what was interesting is that after the photo shot, they've all got their robes over their Western clothes. They all took their robes off and went to McDonald's. She's the only one who stayed in her, you know, devotional dress. This is just different ideas that different temples do. This is in Boise, out in the middle of nowhere, little Boise, Idaho, you know. They do once on January 1st, New Year's, they invite all their congregation, they invite all the neighbors, they advertise in the paper, they do this japathon. That people take a vow, they're going to lose weight, they're going to exercise. But why don't they tune up themselves spiritually? And they said, it's amazing. They get a couple hundred people, and only, you know, half of them are devotees. And they all chant japa, you know, for like a couple hours. They all take prasadam. They all, you know, so it's a nice thing, this japathon. This is a deity festival in Boise. There are over 10,000 flowers here, and they advertise it. Is how to make our festivals, you know, attractive to the public. They advertise in the newspaper. The newspaper comes. People come just from a deity festival. This is Bhagavad Gita's in motels. This started a couple years ago because, you know, so many motels are owned by Indians. We have a guy, Bhaktivatsal is his name. He was thinking, they got this Gideon Bible. Why don't I? It's, I own the motel. Why don't I put Bhagavad Gita there? So he bought a couple cases of Bhagavad Gita. He put them in the motel. He said it was so far out because people, they've been, you know, he's run the motel for years. Nobody ever takes the Gideon Bible, but people take the Bhagavad Gita. And they ask him, you know, hey, I only got the chapter 2. Can I take it with me? He said, yeah, no problem. He distributes regularly, a couple cases a month. People are taking, they're taking Bhagavad Gita. So this is, there's another guy, Janesh Patel, and they went to this, they have the Asian hotel owners. It's like 3,000 people attend. It's the major Asian hotel convention. And they made a presentation, Bhagavad Gitas. And here's their goal, 1 million Gitas. Why not? Now, this is Utah. Just as a quick one, these are all Western kids, Mormons. The way it got started, you can see the temple in the back. Someone donated to the temple 2 llamas. They happen to be male and female llamas. And evidently, llamas have some genetic link to rabbits. They breed very quickly. After a while, they got a, you know, they got a dozen llamas. What to do with these llamas? Hare Krishna, Hare Lama. What to do, you know? What to do? So, turns out that there's, you'll see in one of these pictures, they have these mountain range in back, and there, people go there for backpacking, for trekking, all kinds of stuff. They've trained the llamas, and it's, they rent them out. And they do trekking, and the llamas like it. They like to work, no problem. It's not abusive. So, they have this flock of llamas. Now, it turns out, we have a point here, don't worry. It turns out that the llamas, you know in India, peacocks, that if they learn the routine of a place, and if it, no problem. But if somebody comes at an odd time, or this gate slams, or somebody, we've all experienced in Vrindavan, meow, meow, they'll all go off, you know? So they're actually, and actually the Mughal kings used to use them as guards. The Incans, the kings, used to use llamas, because it's the same principle. They'll learn the routine. But if something happens outside that routine, what they do, they're silent. But they form a circle, and they just close the circle, close the circle, close the circle, close the circle. And they actually, you know, encapsulate or capture the person. And if they want to, with those hooves, they can break your ribs, no problem, you know? So, that's the scene. They've got these llamas. They have a big construction site. The temple's coming up. There's all kinds of, you know, Aryan Nation up there in Idaho and Utah. There's these little pockets. So they got nobody else to pick on. They said, well, let's go beat up the Hare Krishna. Let's go. They actually came to the temple at night, you know, 3 of them, climbed over the fence, and they were going to paint swastikas and, you know, Nazi whatever on the slogans on the temple. The llamas surrounded them. And these, you know, big, tough, you know, heavy boot, you know, they completely freaked because the llamas spit. They hiss, and they're big. You know, a llama's about 8 feet tall, 7 feet tall. They began calling for their mother, you know, please save us. The neighbors were closest to the neighbors called the police, and the devotees woke. They got arrested for vandalism. And what happened, they have something called restorative justice. It's how the system in the juvenile system works there. They don't just, you know, slap you with a fine or put you in jail. You have to do something to make amends. It's actually a nice principle. You have to do something to make amends to the person that you've harmed. You know, and that way you develop some empathy. That's the idea. So they had to work for 1 year. They had to come once a month, one Saturday a month for a year and help out at the temple, whatever the devotees needed. One of them became a full-time devotee. Now, it turns out that his uncle is the head of youth activities at Brigham Young University. And they've got his nephew. The Mormons had tried everything. The guy had become a Nazi and alcohol and drinking. And the Haris saved the guy, turned him into a gentleman, a sane person. They were honest. They were very impressed. They started bringing youth groups. Once a month, they would come and do some project at the temple. And that's how this thing developed. They got on Facebook and so many things. But just to give you an idea, here's the scene. But how we can turn our temple festivals into public festivals. Because people are looking for something to do. Just a sample of the thing. This is last year they had 15,000. The one they just had, they had over 20,000 people. Now, this is a Kalakanta Prabhu in Gainesville. They have a house, and they've started like it's the Hare Krishna house. You can go to school, but also you can live as a devotee full time. So here's the numbers. 18 young devotees, 4 in the neighborhood, 20 regularly. And they also go out. This is the Krishna lunch, 5,000 plates. They said that recently, because everything's up to code, but there, like, some guy was there, they have to have a screen, this and that. So right in the middle of serving the lunch, one of the university's health officials came and shut down the lunch program. Now, you've got a couple thousand kids lined up to take prasadam, and you got a skinny little guy with a clipboard saying no. That's not going to end well. And the student, you know, power to the people, you know. So they began chasing the guy. The guy actually went to his van, and they began rocking his van. And so the devotees, you know, they felt sorry for him. They went over, you know, can we? He said, call him off. What do I do? And so the, you know, intelligent devotee said, well, listen, you know, you better let us serve this lunch and not, but no problem. Where do I sign? You know? So, you know, prasadam brings out very strong emotions. This is a San Diego Krishna Lounge. This is a program designed for Western, you know, 18 to 20. And there's a whole science. Devamrita Maharshi has developed a very nice system. And it's how you, they come for, because bhajan is big. So they'll come for bhajan. Then they, there's a way to present the philosophy. It's all straightforward. But it's not presented as religious sentiment. It's presented as philosophy. They'll chant japa. They'll take prasadam. And here's a little fruit. People will join. People, there are monks out there. There are people who want to do transcendental spiritual missionary work, who want to live in an ashram and want to give mercy. They're out there. Simply, we have to find them and present the right environment to convince them. This is Vancouver for the Winter Olympics. And this is Prabhupada's idea. This is a flatbed truck. And Prabhupada actually drew a sketch of this. He wanted him to have go out and do Harinam all through the town. So it's all amplified, runs off batteries, and they're doing it in Vancouver now. They started for the Olympics. This is, again, how to tailor our festivals to the mindset. So they advertise this bike, you know, valet that you can bicycle in. You know, it's green. And we have a valet system for all of your bikes if you come to the festival. Their attendance increased by 15%. Just because people say, oh, hey, I don't want to drive a car, but I can bicycle, and you'll take care of it. That's all in Vancouver, I'm sorry. This is also Vancouver. Again, how they've made their festivals public festivals. So this, they have a big Tulsi Puja festival. And I just included this because check out this Tulsi. That's very far out. We're almost done. Two more things. So here's the UK. This is in Ireland. Now, yeah, we'll do this first. The, you know, in America they have separation of church and state, and you can't get a dime for any kind of religious or spiritual training. In England, it's different. They'll fund the Jewish school. They fund the Muslim schools because they want to keep control. They'll fund Buddhist schools. They started the first Hindu school. And they put out a bid. You know, the Swami Narayan folks. I think it was that the government would pay 3/4 and you had to come up with a fourth. And you had to show that your credentials, you know, in educational field. The devotees have run such a nice school at Bhaktivedanta Manor for so many years that the British educational, you know, whatever you call it, department said, listen, if you give it to anybody, give it to the Hare Krishnas. They'll produce a quality education. And as a result of that, the devotees beat out all these other bids. This is the school. It just opened September 2009. It's completely green. This, they've got all the insulation. This is grass growing on the roof right here. This is grass growing on. And right in the middle is a temple, Krishna Balaram. Because, you know, when Krishna and Balaram went to their Gurukula. So it's Sandapani Muni. They have a deity of Sandapani Muni and Krishna and Balaram. And you'll see in a minute. But here's a picture of the temple, close up of the temple. Here's the inside. It's all green. It's all top design. I think they have 120 students, and they're adding 40 every year. They're adding a classroom every year. So I think it gets up to about 350. But here's one of the classrooms. I took a snap. Papa shows, Agatsura. It's all Krishna Leela. The board is all devotees, and so they hire all devotee teachers. And they have to teach the ordinary curriculum, you know, maths, whatever. There's no harm in that. And then they also teach all the devotional stuff. Here's the deities, Krishna Balaram. I don't know the answer to that. But it's not high school. So I think, and I don't know exactly how it works in England, but it's like first through eighth. But I'm not sure. Now we've moved to Dublin. This is Pragosh Prabhu, who, in addition to being a GBC member and a wonderful devotee, he also has, I think it's two or three Govinda's restaurants in the city of Dublin. Now, well, maybe I'll show this first. Well, we'll go back. See this, less meat, less heat. One of the biggest producers of methane gas, global warming gas, is the beef industry. In addition to raping the Amazon, you know, by bulldozing the whole thing for grazing land for beef. It's the worst. You want an inconvenient truth? You know Al Gore, who won the Nobel Peace Prize for his environmental work? He has a farm in Tennessee. That's his homestead. You know what they raise on that farm? Angus beef. Now, there's an inconvenient truth. So this was a program started by Paul McCartney, Less Meat, Less Heat. And it was to once a year, government agencies all over the EU should have a vegetarian meal to promote being vegetarian once a year. Come on, you can do that. Parliament, you know, different cities once a year. So what happened is this lady, she goes to our Govinda's restaurant. As she was a lawyer going to school and now she's the mayor, she goes to our Govinda's. Nobody even knew her. She rang up and said, hey, can you guys cater this? We're going to do this vegetarian thing. So Pragosha, definitely, they're paying for it. Definitely. Here's the inside. It was right inside the city hall, old Dublin Castle. Here's the menu. They decided to go full out, knockout menu. So you can just imagine, right before breakfast, nice menu. It was so, here's the city council, Dublin City Council, all taking prasadam. They loved it so much. They said, forget once a year. We're going to do this once a month. Government taxes, you know. If you can produce this, I mean, we can't, more than that, people will get on our case. But once a month, definitely, you know. So now they cater once a month to city council. Now, as we were saying, this is Prabhupada's San Francisco Rathayatra 1970. Now you have to remember, Prabhupada, as we said, got off the boat. He didn't know whether to turn left, whether to turn right. I heard Prabhupada say this. Prabhupada sat down, and it wasn't Tompkins Square Park first, Washington Park or wherever it was. Prabhupada sat down on the grass and started chanting, and a police officer came up and said, move off the grass, buddy. So Prabhupada was sitting on the sidewalk with a pair of kartals. Nothing. Indira, I think it's in that Jaladutta book, but Indira had Prabhupada's diary. She was married to Vamanandev, and it was Prabhupada's days in the Bowery. And you'll see in there entered 23 cents red chili powder, 14 cents postage. Prabhupada had nothing. But full faith in the orders of his spiritual master. He knew this was the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So here we see the Rathayatra 1970. This is New York Rathayatra 2009, right down Fifth Avenue, the same city where Prabhupada said, I was wandering practically like a vagrant. He was going every month, when is the next boat go back to India? And the guy joked with him, he said, you come every month, you're not going. Prabhupada said, I know, but I get some relief. And Prabhupada would go and just find out, you know. When Prabhupada said, when he arrived, Prabhupada's first impression of New York, you know, people impressed, Statue of Liberty, Wall Street, Prabhupada said the whole place smelled like dog stool. That was Prabhupada's impression of New York, you know. But here it is. And it's to the credit of the devotees. They're carrying it on. Prabhupada said Fifth Avenue, the most important city, most important street, in the most important city, in the most important country. And here's Jagannath sailing down it. So it's to the credit of ISKCON, you know. People say so many things. Oh, you know. But who else is doing this? This is the only nighttime Rathayatra in the world. This is the Woodford Music Festival in Brisbane, Australia. Here's why they do it at night. 2,000 to 300,000 people attend this rock festival, and the devotees get to go right through it with a Rathayatra. This is a portable tent. This is a devotee named Ajita, who's a very intelligent man. This is a big Pandal tent, and it all packs up into a truck, and they travel and do festivals all over Australia. They collected, and I converted to U.S. dollars, over $1 million last year selling prasadam at festivals. They've completely paid off their farm, New Govardhan. Here's all the devotees. You know, when Swavas gets on your case, how you have to look nice when you're in the restaurant, things have to be clean. He's not a nitpicker. He's not a fanatic. He's not trying to make your life miserable. Prabhupada said, if you don't make the cover nice, people will not read the book. And that was right. I was the gardener here in L.A. And Prabhupada, we weren't taking care of the lawns. We weren't mowing so much and edging. So Prabhupada got out of his car and looked at the lawns. He said, what is this? And the devotee said, well, we can't do it because of this and that. Prabhupada said, everyone else's lawn is mowed. You know, everyone else has a nice garden. Why can't we have a nice, neat place? So you make it nice, people appreciate. Prabhupada said people in Kali Yuga are very superficial. Therefore, you have to be attentive to these things. Otherwise, they're skitterish. So this is Piccadilly 2000, plates of prasadam, one of the most important streets in London. This, I think you may recognize. Because I show this around the world. So this is our L.A. Rathayatra. Gold standard of Rathayatras. I don't know if these numbers, these may be even more accurate. So Vas gave me, they'd be even bigger than this now, but it just gives you a picture. Just think how happy Srila Prabhupada is. Prabhupada is a child. You know, how he loved Rathayatra. And to see this going on such a scale, just think how happy Prabhupada is. Well, to speak of the mercy of Jagannath. This is our little Tijuana Rath Yatra. If you'll notice, there's a marimba, what do you call it? Mariachi band in front. And they were a little off in the beginning, you know. They had their tunes, we had our tunes. But after a while, they picked up the tunes, and it was actually a lot of fun, you know. So this is Rath Yatra in Bali. It's the largest Muslim country in the world. And you can see, you know, here's a Balinese Rath Yatra cart. Very far out. Now, this is the last thing, just to give us some confidence that we just go forward. We have the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We simply execute it. This is Prabhupada in Moscow. I think 73, 74 Prabhupada went. Prabhupada saw them all lined up at Lenin's tomb. You know, Red Square, they're all lined up at Lenin's tomb. You know, Prabhupada said, Prabhupada asked, what is this? They said, oh, well, they're all going to see Lenin's body. It's in the mausoleum here. Prabhupada said, you know why they're all lined up? Why they're all going? Fodi said, no. Prabhupada said, make sure he's dead. It's true. People were suffering like him. Prabhupada immediately pegged it. Everyone thought, oh, we're about to be crushed by the Russian bear. Prabhupada said, no, everything's shoddy. Everything's falling apart. The people are completely miserable. Prabhupada looked. He looked at the cars. He said, everything is poor construction. This will not last. Both because it's crushing human initiative and because everything's shoddy and cheap. It won't last. CIA had it wrong. Prabhupada had it right. These are handmade Bhagavad Gitas. Just because I want you to understand the oppression the devotees were under and how they just continued. You know, just like the Pandavas. It's not, look what Prabhupada went through. We just carry on. If you notice, these are printed on a typewriter and they've handwritten the verses in. And what they would do is they'd print a copy and I'd give it to you. And then you'd give it to your next friend. You'd give it to your next friend. Bhagavatam, they'd have one chapter. I'd read the chapter. I'd give it to you. I'd get the next chapter. And this way, like a chain letter, it was the Prabhupada's books were circulating. One devotee, I've forgotten his name, and I've got to look it up. He was a professor in Armenia. This is we'll be done in 10 minutes, 5 minutes, I promise. Huh? In Armenia, he was a college professor. Became a devotee. He thought, well, let me teach Bhagavad Gita. Because I'm teaching all these other things, I can just slip it in, you know? He began teaching Bhagavad Gita. KGB, this is a true story. KGB came and said, you can't do this in our workers' paradise. This is the opiate of the people. You can't do this. If you don't stop, we're going to throw you out of the university. He's a devotee. How can he stop? He thought, I'm giving people truth. What is the use? He didn't stop. Huh? Krishna will protect me. They threw him out of jail. I threw him out of the university. So he's at home. He thought, well, listen, this is actually Krishna's mercy. He said, in the universe, I've got to teach all these other courses. I'll just teach Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Fantastic. So many students were coming. You know, the whole country is working on barter system anyway. Everything was working fine. KGB came and said, you have to stop. If you don't stop, we're throwing you in jail. He thought, well, how can I stop? It's the truth. So they threw him in jail. He thought, oh, this is Krishna's mercy, actually. He said, these kids, you know, they're on the apex of life, and they think, you know, they're young, they're going to live forever, they're going to enjoy. See, you know, but in jail, people are suffering. They understand this world is not such a nice place. It's a better audience. This is Krishna's mercy. He continued. They told him, if you don't stop, forget being in this common jail. We're sending you to the gulag. We're sending you off to the salt mines, you know. You're off to Siberia. He didn't stop. They sent him off to Siberia. He said, this is Krishna's mercy. Actually, he was suffering. He was suffering a lot. But how a devotee, his teeth became loose because of the diet and everything, you know. He was really suffering. But his conclusion was, this is Krishna's mercy. He said, you know, because in the prison, in the jail, you got all these robbers and thieves and common muggers and stuff, you know. But in the gulag, you know, in the political camps, these are people of conscience. These are either religious people or, you know, thinkers. This is a much better audience. So he didn't stop. And they finally told him, if you don't stop, no more cigarettes, no more meat, no more vodka. He wasn't doing anything anyway, you know. No problem for him. They were crude. They didn't know how to crush this man. And the thing is that people are in for 3 years, people are in for five. I may be in for a 20-year sentence, but maybe I've only got a year left, you know? So like you blow a dandelion and the seeds go everywhere. Because they couldn't stop him, they kept transferring him. And he met so many people and made so many devotees. It's one of the ways that Krishna consciousness just boomed. Because those people all got out and they were devotees. So handbound, only have a few of these shots and we'll be done. This is devotees in a psychiatric prison. That's where the devotees were locked up. That one, one girl actually miscarried because she was suffering so much. So, I mean, it was very, very hellish conditions, but they would not change. Devotees at night would run up to this fence. See this fence here? They would run up to this fence and yell, Hare Krishna, and then run. Otherwise, they'd get caught by the police. And the devotees inside would think, well, at least someone's remembering us. That was their only solace. At least there's devotees outside who have not forgotten. And they would not give up. Here's, they used to make japa beads because they thought, you know, no meat, no cigarettes, no alcohol. What to do? They took away their japa beads. They took their bedspreads, you know, bed sheets, tore it, tied them, and made japa mala out of it. When that didn't work, they took their bread. You know, when they took away the sheets, then you know that Russian bread, heavy bread? They would push it into a ball, push a straw through it, make a bead, dry it in the sun, then take a strip of cloth or string and made their own japa beads. You know, we go to Lloyd Bazaar and pick through, well, what kind of mala do I want, you know? Now, even afterwards, even after Gorbachev and things opened up, they finally were allowed to open a temple. So this is the first temple in Moscow. But what happened is the Russian Orthodox Church, which is very nationalistic and connected with the government, freaked that, you know, devotees, it's expanding like anything. There was a radio show that really was the catalyst for the thing. Devotees, it was on Radio Moscow, one of the biggest radio stations, goes out to millions of people. It was a debate. Russian Orthodox on one side, devotees on the other side. You know, this is mind control, this is foreign, why are you doing it? And devotees are arguing back. The devotees, it was Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj, the other devotee, Madan Mohan, they were winning. And the audience, phone in audience, actually shifted and started to, you know, why are you picking on these people? You know, when I was a child, this is what monks used to be like. And they started getting on the case. And finally, one guy called in. It was just one of the guys was one of the top monks in the Russian Orthodox Church in Moscow. A person calling in said, listen, I want you to make a promise that the question I ask, you have to vow to God that you'll tell the truth. And said, yes, I always tell the truth. No, you vow to God that may you be struck dead if you don't tell the truth. So what can the guy say? He has to say it, right? So he said, the monk, yes, the Russian monk. So the man said, how have you had any vodka in the last week? Yes. Have you had any vodka in the last 3 days? Yes. Have you had any vodka in the last 24 hours? Yes. Did you have vodka this morning? Yes. How much? 1 liter. Shocked. It was so shocking, they pulled the show off and they began playing music, you know? Because people were just fried. Here you've got people who are actually practicing, giving genuine knowledge, and you all guys are harassing them, and you can't even stop taking schnapps or whatever it is, you know? So they became very angry, and, you know, many other things happened. Here they are destroying the temple. The devotees would not give up. Check this out. This is a snow Ratha Yatra. You know, we're at Venice Beach, and, you know, you couldn't... I mean, it's like, it's heavenly. Sea breeze is blowing. It's just Jagannath is having a fantastic time. It's just wonderful. I mean, look at what they're wearing, Prabhus. And here, see some of the Prabhus running to catch up, you know? They must have had Jagannath in a chadar and a hat. I don't know how they did it, you know? But they would not stop. And now, only three slides and we're done. This is a computer-generated... You know, computer animation. These plans are completely approved. They own the land. The plans have been submitted. They'll begin construction next year. They took it away. Actually, thank you for that question. I'll show you that in a second. We'll get back to it. Here's a little close-up of it. Now, exactly so. This is by one of the main rivers. I forget this river. The land you had, you can't own land in Moscow. You can get like a 50-year lease or whatever it is in government control, and they can always pull it back from you. That was the land we had. It was a fantastic location, but that was the land we had. This land that the government gave us is any land on this side is under that, you know, 50-year lease only. This land we own permanently. They can't harass us. They can't touch us. They can't bother us. So that's the land. Here it is at night. And that's it, Prabhus. A sample of what's going on. One last thing, I promise. One last thing. Sudam Prabhu told me this. He was walking with Srila Prabhupada in the L.A. airport. And, you know, in those days, big kirtan, and Prabhupada's there, and you're just hundreds of devotees. Sudam said to Prabhupada, sometimes, Prabhupada, when I'm walking with you, I feel proud. Now, is that a bad thing? Prabhupada said, no. You should think, by the grace of my Guru Maharaj, I am no longer a fool and a rascal. So that pride is not arrogance, but we should be proud that we have this noble tradition and that we are members of ISKCON and that we have something to do with our life, that we can actually deliver the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We are most fortunate and most proud. And here's some samples. Thank you, Hare Krishna. Thank you.